to another episode of We the People Radio. My name is Aaron Ryan.
My name is Bill Cunningham.
Oh, sure it is.
Yeah. Still.
A little scramble there.
Hey, our sponsor this hour is Pape Machinery, our local John Deere Ag and Turf dealer. Can you hear me okay?
I can.
Yeah.
Can you not hear you?
Yeah, I have these quality headphones on. I can't hear a whole lot.
Take the beans out of your ears.
Yeah. So, Pape Machinery, they're located at 3119 Twin View Boulevard in the city of Shasta Lake, and they've got everything John Deere up there that you could possibly want. Go up and see them. They got tractors, mowers, implements, parts, service. They do it all. Or you can give them a call. The phone number is 530-226-9226, or get them on the web at papemachinery.com. That's P-A-P-E machinery.com.
Yes, and we determined on the ride over here that they are taking over the world. They're everywhere.
Yeah, world domination.
You can't go wrong with world domination. Well, no. Unless you're...
As long as everybody's included.
Yeah, and there's equity. Don't forget that. Just ask Klaus Schwab.
Yeah.
All right. So today we're doing the next step here on the National Center for Missing and Exploited Children. Today we're going to focus on, I say we, using that term very loosely, Bill and I will be riding along in the back seat while our guest, Paul Skinner, drives the bus. And the focus today is on exploitation. So he is a member of Team Adam, which is the Investigative Resource Provision Unit of the National Center for Missing and Exploited Children. You'll see it, the abbreviation is NCMEC, N-C-M-E-C. You see it on TV all the time down in the corners on crime shows. We've all seen it a lot and maybe didn't know what that was, so you'll be able to kind of look behind the curtain this time. He has professional experience of 4 decades working in municipal policing and working in the criminal justice system in the prosecution of offenders. Yay! Paul is a graduate of the FBI National Academy, where he majored in the management of cold case investigations. Additionally, he has experience as an adjunct instructor for the Humphreys University teaching criminal justice students in advanced and complicated investigations. As a member of Team Adam, Paul brings the experience and expertise in the areas of cold case investigations, spatial behavior of offenders, and the prosecution of no-body homicide cases, which is pretty outside the realm of what most of us have been doing. So before we get into our topic, what's spatial behavior of offenders? What does that mean?
It's a fancy term for patterns, really. As human beings, we all have patterns.
Yeah.
Patterns of movement. And
so are they likely to go here, go there, see this person, that person, that kind of stuff?
Yeah, we follow the path of least resistance as a matter of habit.
Okay.
And so it's a matter on spatial testing and spatial investigations. It's a matter of determining what is the least amount of movement necessary to go from point A, where the crime occurred, to point B, where the person, the body is found, or another crime occurs. And so it's, like I said, it's a fancy term for a very simplistic process, really, when you think about it, because all you're looking at is the human behavior pattern of finding the path of least resistance. It's almost like looking for a missing person. If a missing person who is suffering from dementia or some other type of mind-altering issue is faced with going uphill or downhill, they go downhill.
Makes sense.
If they're faced with dry versus wet, they go towards wet.
They do?
Yes. And so with those
okay, items see, I wouldn't have figured that one. Why is
yes.
that?
We don't know.
Oh.
We really don't know.
It's just a thing.
It's a thing. And we find that especially true with missing children who are on the autism spectrum or adults who are suffering from some type of dementia. That they will gravitate towards water. And that's usually the first place that law enforcement will go to search, and they'll actually lock it down, meaning they will hold it in case that person does get out of their perimeter and come back towards him. So spatial patterns is just
interesting.
That. It's determining the pattern that somebody would most likely take to either make things easier on themselves for ingress and egress, or to make things easier on themselves as far as non-disclosure. So they're not disclosing who they are, where they are, or how they're moving.
Interesting. Well, because it was always like, you know, in all the old crime shows, it's always a joke. The guy breaks out of prison and goes right to his mom's house.
That's a great example.
And they, you know, because it's the first thing I was thinking of. Like, breaks out of prison, we'll just wait at his mom's house, you know, because he'll be here, you know, for dinner or whatever. Is that still a thing?
It is a thing. It's a thing. And when you talk to law enforcement, they'll tell you that the most productive day when they're trying to serve arrest warrants is those days where families gather.
Mm.
And so families gather, and the wanted person shows up at mom's house for apple pie.
Yep.
And law enforcement's waiting for him.
That's just kind of sad, in a way. You would think after all this time as a criminal, you'd be like, hey, wait a second, they're going to look for me at my mom's house. I should probably... Yeah, but no.
These are not the brightest.
Yeah, apparently. It kind of blows my mind. But and then there are other people who are pretty clever, I'm sure. But but still, that's the pattern thing. I could see that being just a big deal. If you have somebody who really follows that kind of stuff, that's really invaluable. Probably at the beginning. Is it good at the front end or on the cold case thing? Does it still come in handy there?
It's really good on the cold case.
Really?
Side of the house, yes. Because especially if you have multiple offenses and multiple cases, you can take a look at those cases, and just with that issue alone, you can tie those cases together, where before you may not have had enough information to tie those cases together. Once you establish this is a pattern of behavior by the offender, then you can tie those together. And I'll give you a quick example if you want.
Yeah.
This is a local example. This is a homicide of a gentleman, and there are two ways into his home, two roadways. One roadway is curvy. The other roadway was straight. So we chose to use the straight roadway as our spatial point of impact or point of reference at the beginning, and started checking for video cameras on that straightaway roadway. And guess who we found? Our suspect fleeing the scene. Now, we could have spent a lot of time
doing the curvy road,
checking both
or
the curvy road. And eventually we did check the curvy road. But on a case like that, you're trying to get your offender in custody as soon as possible so he doesn't reoffend, number one.
Yeah.
And number two, so he doesn't flee the jurisdiction of the court. So you follow that whole spatial pattern concept and say, okay, what's the easiest way for this person to go from point A to point B with the least amount of obstructions and the least amount of chance of detection?
Now, in the event that, somebody is on the run and they're not familiar with an area, isn't there a statistic as to whether or not they usually go left or right when they...
You know, I've heard that quoted by several PhDs on both directions.
Oh, okay. All right.
There's actually a third option, too, and the third option is that there's a circular issue where they will offend in a neighborhood they're not used to. They'll try to flee, and they wind up coming back where the police are doing the investigation. And the police are trying to do the investigation. They look over their shoulder, and there's your suspect
right
back through this crime scene.
Huh.
I've had that happen to me before.
And do they typically return to the scene of the crime like they always say?
It depends on the crime, obviously. If it's a crime that's notorious, if it's a crime involving, especially the arson suspects that like the fire,
yeah.
And they like
they
to
always
see
say that.
The result of that fire,
right.
they will be there. So oftentimes you'll see law enforcement videotaping the crowd who's watching law enforcement videotape.
Right. Interesting.
Terrifying, actually. It's always nice to know that there is some pattern, though, because if there's a pattern, you can spot it.
Yeah.
So, you know, I mean, good for you.
Yeah, look there first.
So,
you know, you never know.
So in the exploitation thing with children, I know you said you had a story. We've probably got, I don't know, 5 minutes till a break. You said it was a two-parter. Want to start there, or you want to do some other stuff first?
Why don't we start there? I want to tell you about a young lady named Heather. And Heather, in the year 2000, was a student at a high school. And this school offered career night. And so they had probably 40 or 50 speakers in different classrooms that would present for 20 minutes at a time on their careers. And so Heather was interested in a class on modeling. So she went to the modeling class with her parents and was told about all the advantages of becoming a young teenage model. The money associated with it, the status associated with it, the fact that you could go from that and parlay that type of of hobby slash occupation into something in the business world. So the offer was made during that 20-minute session to have classes on modeling, and the photographer who led the session was going to lead these classes. And so we started leading these classes. These classes would meet once a week, and she and other girls and their parents would meet. And he would discuss things like, this is what's required of a model nowadays, drug-free, good grades, all those types of things that we as parents want to hear.
Parents want to hear, yeah.
And included in that was also a discussion about the portfolio, the all-important portfolio. You had to have a portfolio of your photographs in order to be considered legitimate in the business or to be considered for any type of work. And he was offering to do those photographs for them if they chose to. But he also made it very clear that he was a product photographer. So he would take pictures of products and would show. So he talked about the importance of hand models and arm models holding particular plumbing products and how nails had to be just right. And, you know, you couldn't have blemishes on your skin of your arms, that type of thing. So each Thursday night they would meet and there would be a discussion. And each Thursday night he would take photographs of these young ladies holding different products. And each Thursday night, they would pick out which photographs they liked to be included in their portfolio. Everything seems on legit. The parents are happy with what's going on. The young ladies are learning something. It looks good. Then they start getting into the minutia. And the minutia was how to walk, how to talk, how to stand. All those things that we as parents sitting there in the audience would go, you've got to be kidding me.
Yeah.
So slowly the parents dropped off, but yet the girls continued to go. So then he transitions the young ladies into product sales, where they're stepping out of a shower, because his particular genre was plumbing fixtures, where they're stepping out of a shower draped in a towel. And that led to more risque photographs, which led to even more risque photographs. And when law enforcement became involved in the case, he was actually selling the photographs to different people.
And these were high school kids?
These were high school girls.
Okay.
And these were brought forward through the U.S. Postal Service, that it intercepted them on sales.
Okay.
At that time, the computer, this is 2000, so we were all in the computer world, but we were all working, I remember, on mainframes and everything else.
Oh, yeah.
So we didn't have everything computerized. So the, quote, photographer gets arrested. He's found guilty. He goes to jail. She has to testify in court, which for a, then she was an 18-year-old girl. That's fairly traumatic to have to testify in court. But he groomed her, and we'll be talking about grooming, to the point where she thought he was her friend and was going to help her break into this new, wonderful, exotic world of money-making modeling. And really what he was doing was selling nude images of her to other people. So, and later on this afternoon, as we continue to talk, I'll tell you about how this case boomeranged back on her this many years later. So this was 2000, and now 2003, we're back on this case again.
Oh, no kidding.
And so my overall objective today is to let you know that these cases involving child exploitation are boomerang cases. They have the potential to come back and occur again and again and again involving the same victim. So if we were to take a parking lot robbery, you get out of your car and you're going to the grocery store, and an unknown guy comes up to you and says, give me your money. You give him your money. He leaves. You leave. Whether he's arrested or not, the chances of it happening to you again.
Same guy or different guy.
Still fairly
either way.
Slim.
Pretty
still
slim,
fairly
yeah.
Slim.
Yeah.
Because as time goes by, you're going to move. He's going to move.
Yeah.
He's going to change. Things are going to change in his life. Things are going to change in your life. You may not be shopping. All kinds of different issues. With exploitation, once something's on the internet, that can be retrieved and brought back up again through a myriad of different sources. And the victim can be victimized one more time.
Right.
A second time.
Dang.
A third time. And time has no bearing here. And so one of the things I'm particular particularly proud of is my organization, the National Center for Missing and Exploited Children, has a program called Take It Down. So that these young folks that have been involved in these types of situations where there's been inappropriate things posted about them on the internet, we work with the social media platforms and we actually pull it down. Now, I will tell you, at the same time, we also work with the FBI to pull down the person that put that up.
And this includes photos they may have sent to a boyfriend and that kind of thing.
Yes.
So it doesn't always have to be part of some nefarious thing. It could be just bad judgment in your youth.
It very rarely starts out as a nefarious thing.
It
starts out with somebody that they trust.
Mm.
And as you know, if you take a look at our own lives, we're all adults. If you take a look at the last 10 years, all the people that have been in and out of your life in the last 10 years, some you were so happy to see leave that you wished them well. Others are still that burn inside that you wish you still had that personal contact. So the one thing we know with exploitation cases and with cold cases involving nobody homicides is that no relationship remains static. There's no such thing as a static relationship.
We're human
beings and relationships change. Sometimes they get stronger over time and secrets will go to the grave with people. Other times you swore, pinky swore, and all those things you did as a child with your best friend. Now you think to yourself, my goodness, this is crazy.
Yeah. Well, this is kind of, so today is sort of all about the long con.
It is a long con.
It's the long con.
It just won't go away.
Oh, man. So we're here with Paul Skinner from the National Center for Missing and Exploited Children. You're listening to We the People, and you can find the previous show we did with him August 6th of this year. Today is September 17th, 2023. You can find that at wethepeopleradio.us.
I'm going to do bad things, do it like it's nothing. Being bad has never felt so good. Doing bad things to you.
Now on the day I was born, the nurses all gathered round. And they gazed in wide wonder at the joy they had found. The head nurse spoke up, said, leave this one alone. She could tell right away that I was bad to the bone. Bad to the bone. Bad to the bone. Bad.
There's a lot of songs about badness. Figured we'll play them all today, right? Since we're talking about badness. Ugh. Okay, so onward with the groomer guy.
Oh, okay. I'll be happy to. So that was in 2000.
Yeah.
We're now 2023. Heather is now 40 years old, and she is contacted through LinkedIn and another social media platform by an unknown person that says, I have nude images of you, and I'm going to be putting them on the internet. And I'm going to be exposing you, both professionally and personally, unless, fill in the blank.
Yeah.
Give me X amount of money, that sure. type of thing. She contacts law enforcement. Law enforcement says, it's been since 2000. You have an option. Among your options is to do nothing and to see if this person really has that. Because law enforcement took the original images, the original photographs. And so she chooses to do nothing. And
Oops.
1 week later, she receives a message from one of her girlfriends on Facebook that says, why do I have this nude photo of you in my Facebook mail?
So do nothing was the bad road?
Well, maybe.
Yeah. Well, we don't know. So then the extortion demand, and I use the word extortion, the extortion demand starts coming in from different sources, not just the one source. So clearly her images have been sold on the dark web. So what happened between 2000 and 2023? What happened for her is she's now a professional woman. She is very, very out there on social media, very out there as far as community clubs and events and that type of thing.
Because she's a grown-up, right.
Goes on. She's 40
and the,
years
and the
old.
Person who did this originally went to jail and all that stuff.
Went to jail and
okay.
all that stuff.
All right.
So it turns out that he sold her images prior to going to jail. Those images have been on the dark web for quite some time. They've been floating around. The suspect in this particular case uses what California law enforcement can't use, and that's facial recognition. So he used facial recognition from his own corporation that he worked for to identify her from those images and then started extorting her or trying to extort her for money.
Holy cow.
So
law enforcement can't use that?
No. We are prohibited in California from using facial recognition, only on very, very small, minute cases. We're one of the few states that doesn't allow facial recognition.
And this is, I know the answer is going to be something that's going to make me want to commit a crime, but go ahead and tell us, why is that?
We don't know. California sheriffs, California chiefs of police have lobbied for that. Sexual Assault Investigators Association for California have lobbied for facial recognition. You can't go to a business, a large business in the North State without being caught on facial recognition, and yet law enforcement can't use it in California. I know. It's one of those things that make you scratch your head and go, what?
Is it, so did the California legislature pass a law that said you can't use it, or it's
yes.
just never, is it a,
yes.
you can't use it, or you can't, okay, wow.
Yeah.
All right.
So here we're caught.
But the criminals aren't, so he's able, so it's all good.
Right. He's able to identify her through the use of a private platform.
Yeah.
Facial recognition identifies her, finds out that she's a person of notoriety in her community, and decides to reach out to her and say, I'm going to be doing these types of things.
So he was the one who pretended to be whoever. It was him that had the images.
Exactly.
Still.
Well, we know that he is one of.
Okay.
Could be many. We don't know. So that's kind of a story to tell you about the whole issue that when it comes to child exploitation, and especially this type of offense, when it's involving something that never forgets, the internet,
mm-hmm.
we wind up with a boomerang investigation where this has come back. Here we are 13 years later.
Yeah.
And this has come back in her life. She doesn't deserve this. Clearly, the bad guy got arrested. Clearly, all of his equipment was taken and seized. Clearly, we're not sure if other images are out there. We're not.
So, did they catch him the second time?
Yes. A different guy from the first guy.
No kidding.
Yeah.
Wow.
So... And so I offer that as kind of a story to kind of go through this background of what child exploitation really is, because people have an idea. They think they know what it is, but they're not really certain, and they have a kind of a good idea, but it's a complex issue, and it's basically divided into two types, sexual and economic. And some examples of exploitation is online grooming, which we saw an example of with that story. Live streaming, where a young person's been talked into live streaming a certain action or inaction. And then that information is then captured and then put out on the dark web. Of course, radicalization and extremism is obviously an issue that we deal with children and exploitation. And then, of course, modern slavery. Not too much of that here in the North State, a lot of it in the South State, where children are extorted to either perform work at no pay or work at substandard pay, or else there's going to be a revelation as to their past character.
And is that in any particular type of industry, or just depends on what the perpetrator...
It's usually small industry.
Okay.
Because the larger industries, especially industries that have HR departments and stuff like that, they watch for that stuff very
closely. Is it like manufacturing, farming?
Usually manufacturing, farming.
Yeah, okay.
That type of thing. So what we're talking about is what's called CSAM, and you'll see this in the near future on both publications and on the news. because it's become the new catchphrase for child sexual abuse material. And unfortunately, most of the CSAM that's out there on the internet is self-generated. And so it's our poor children that are actually generating this. And they're putting it out on the internet, most of the time to people that they trust. And so as far as some information goes, in a recent survey, 1 out of 5 teenage girls and 1 out of 10 teenage boys are reporting that they have shared nude images of themselves to someone that they've trusted.
Wow, 1 out of 5.
1 out of 5 teenage girls and 1 out of 10 teenage boys.
Wow.
And many cases go unreported. In fact, most cases go unreported because the minors don't view themselves as victims. Yet.
Yet.
Yet. And offenders who engage in crowdsourcing, and that's one of our new terms, right? Crowdsourcing. Offenders that engage in crowdsourcing schemes right now are super difficult to identify because they change their platforms constantly.
And what does that mean?
I'm glad you asked.
Yeah, what does that mean?
So crowdsourcing, the original movement behind crowdsourcing was where we could get like people together that had a common interest or common goal and talked amongst ourselves to see who had what strengths and who had what resources available so that we could reach that common goal. And this started, really, there was a thing called the Birthday Club that started in Fresno, California, and then expanded out through California, where they would change it from names from Birthday Club to Women's Empowerment Group, to where you'd have a buy-in, and you would meet once a month with all these people of like interest, usually at the initial part it was all women, who were trying to get ahead in the professional business world. And they would meet once a week, and they would empower each other and basically say, these are my needs for this, for me to meet.
And when you say meet physically at a location.
Yes. Okay. Yes. So they would have a lunch together, and they would get together and share what they needed to do for their next step in getting further along in the business world, which is a great concept when you think about it. I mean, talk about empowering people back and forth. What they found, though, is that it was a scam. And the scam was, there was a membership dues, there was dues for each meeting, and those dues didn't go to anybody in particular. Well, then along comes the internet. We push the internet out. The internet becomes a place for people to meet of like interests. In fact, we were talking earlier about the algorithm. You know, once you log on and you say, I want to know all about using a plastic worm for bass fishing, tomorrow I've got videos waiting for me on plastic worm bass fishing. So the pedophiles have realized that this is a great source to get people together, to get potential victims together, and do some type of activity that is not related to the sexual process. It may be Warcraft, some type of game people are playing, some type of chat room. And then once that is established, now instead of dealing with one potential victim that you're trying to groom, you now have the potential for 100 victims that are part of your group. Of those, some of those are
They were willing to show up once.
Yeah.
So it's like, odds are, they might show up again.
Exactly. And the thing we all have to remember, especially those of us as parents and grandparents, is that every device is capable of doing this. It doesn't matter if it's a track phone, and it's a pay-as-you-go phone. It doesn't matter if it's an Apple, Android, laptop, iPad. It doesn't matter. Every device is capable of the owner participating in some type of group sourcing event. And so what the offenders are doing is they're using that as something that they can take further and develop them further. And we go back to the word grooming again. And so they're actually step by step, incrementally, introducing these young children to the next step on the grooming process, and that's getting their trust, getting their faith, getting them to understand that nobody understands them quite like you do as the offender. And as we know, once you've done that, then parents become passé.
Sure.
To the
Nobody's running this past the parents because obviously
exactly.
we have this other person who has taken on this predominant role.
Exactly.
Great.
And this other person can take on any persona they want.
Is it usually one person or is it like a two or three or four? Does it just...
There's no pattern.
Huh. Curious.
We've seen them as many as 30 people involved.
Whoa.
Adults, and as few as one involved running five or six crowdsourcing events
Dang.
At one time.
Okay.
And with the advent of gaming, mm-hmm. you have all these young people that really want to excel at whatever game they take on, and you have these really smart gamers that are developing these games that are also using those as a resource pool.
And then you can communicate with them while they're at home.
Yes.
Because you have an open channel at
yes.
that point.
Yeah, and they're suitable for recruitment right at that point. And so the question I usually get asked when I'm talking with groups like the Rotary Club and Lions Clubs and those types of things is how can this happen? You know, this makes no sense. How can it happen? And I have to refer people back to, if you remember, Maslow's theory
mm-hmm.
from high school and college days.
The pyramid.
The pyramid. We have a very vulnerable population, and that's children who are trying to seek acceptance.
Mm-hmm.
We also have a vulnerable population of children who are either in foster care or their family life is terrible. So they're seeking something. Now, whether that something is food, water, shelter at the bottom of Maslow's hierarchy, or whether that something is self-actualization and morality at the top of Maslow's hierarchy, they're seeking something. And these offenders know that. And they know exactly which stage of Maslow's hierarchy that they can impact that particular person.
Yeah, just a matter of time before they hit on it, and then they can focus in on what they're actually looking to get out of it.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. And so it's troublesome.
Really almost, I mean, when you start looking at it, you know, you kind of relax your mind and you sort of let it drift through that whole idea that you just said. It's like, okay, there'd be like no way to really avoid this. There's no foolproof, like, you know, your kid's going to go to stuff. They're going to go to things. They're going to participate in things. I know there are all sorts of ways that you're going to tell us about that parents can do to make sure these things are not happening. But, I mean, that's a wide open door.
It
is. That is a very wide open door.
We have to
take a really quick break here.
Okay.
But I will tell you on the outgoing that Bill and I could never be sucked into a gaming thing because we bought a video game a really, really long time ago when they first invented them. And we started playing it on Friday after work. And then Monday at 6 o'clock, we still hadn't taken a shower. And our apartment was littered with pizza boxes because we had not been to bed. So we boxed up the game and we took it to work and we gave it to someone else. And we never bought another one. So no one's going to lure us in. We're safe, Bill.
That's right.
We're safe. Yeah, we decided we had a little problem there. Oh, my gosh. You are listening to We the People, and you can find us at wethepeopleradio.us.
Dumb day sleeping in an alley. Didn't matter to me. I got lost walking in the valley. Well, it could have been 1993 when it goes badly. After burning so bright, trying to make sense of a hopeless situation. Feels like dying in the middle of the night. When it goes badly, you're alone in the darkness. Nothing's ever ever make it right.
I'm a cop, I'ma lock you up like a criminal. You better run, run, run till you can't run no more.
Rotten criminals. Don't even try it. We've got Paul Skinner out there with the National Center for Missing and Exploited Children who will hunt you down forever, basically, right? Did you guys hunt him down forever? Is there a limit? on time?
We give law enforcement that information, and they'll hunt you down. You better believe it.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. So they're going to chase you around forever. Okay. Back to the crowdsourcing that Bill and I can't do because we don't have video games.
I was curious. Is there any one particular website or platform that they tend to gravitate to, like TikTok or you know, one of these social media sites that you find more abuse on?
No, they're
that's too bad.
No, they're widespread, and it seems like every week we have more platforms that pop up where some genius person has developed a new platform, and that platform is now advertised as being the gamers platform or the platform for elementary students, you know, that type of thing. So it's across the board.
Is it common? Okay, so if it's like a gaming thing, guess I'm out of the loop on this. Obviously, I already made my confession at the end of the last segment. But they go there? Is this like summer camp for gaming? Like, how old are these kids? Like, when they crowdsource this, is this high school age? Is this elementary? Or is it kind of all over the place?
That's a great question. And the answer is there
take
is...
Take that, Bill.
Yeah, Bill, take that. The answer is if the offender, whether the offender is a child or an adult,
right,
knows how to set up a game, then they've just crowdsourced.
Oh.
So it's not uncommon for us to deal with people that once we identify through the IP address who the offender is, it's not uncommon for the offender to be a 13-year-old boy.
Oh.
It's not uncommon.
Whoa.
It just, you know, we have these kids that were unlike you and I, where we were spending our time outside playing, having a good time. They're spending their time learning how to program, and they're learning how to set up games and that type of thing.
And then they figure out how to move it one click down and make it pay.
Yeah, and the way they do that is well, as we talked about before, is grooming. And grooming, the offender gets the satisfaction from each step in the grooming process. Unlike the rapist gets satisfaction from the event.
Okay.
The groomer gets satisfaction for each step in the process. I have moved this person to this next step. I'm that much closer to the end. And each step that gets them closer to the end exerts more control over that person.
Mm.
And so when you want to think
about... It's a weird kind of satisfaction.
Exactly. You want to think about the axis of evil.
Yeah.
This is truly the axis of evil that we're moving them. And so one of the other techniques, or some of the other techniques that they're using right now, is when you have a child that gets caught up in this type of issue, this sextortion issue, they will actually do a check on that person through open source information and will lay down landmines, little comments like, gee, I hope your dog Fifi doesn't get hurt.
Oh, nice.
And they have a dog named Fifi. And when I first heard this, I thought, you've got to be kidding. This type of information is not on the internet.
Yeah.
Or it shouldn't be. And I was sitting in a class, and we took a break one day and came back from break. And the instructor in the class that I was in said, hey, Paul, how's your wife doing? She's fine. He said, okay. She's still enjoying teaching? Yeah. And he goes, well, how about Sam? I go, my dog? Yeah, your dog. How about him? He's okay. Well, you know, he's due for a rabies shot coming up soon.
Who's telling you this?
The instructor.
Oh.
And I'm thinking, uh-oh, we've gone too far. This world's gotten weird.
Yeah.
And then he says, I'm really sorry about your son's first marriage. I'm sorry it didn't work out. And what had happened is we took a break, and the class was on computer security.
Sure.
What's available.
And you went and checked your computer security.
We had taken a break, and I had left my binder sitting there, and there had been a handout, and I'd written my name on the top of the handout. He knew, obviously, my name. He knew where I was from. And while we took a 5-10 minute break, he's getting this information. Well, if he's getting that information back in 1982.
Yeah.
I'm sorry, 1992. then
roughly the same data set.
What's available now?
Yeah.
And
yeah.
So to use private information is another way of grooming. To use school information is also another way of grooming. We've seen some cases where the offender will refer to somebody, like in your case, say, "Hey, Aaron, you old matador, you," and that happens to be the mascot of your school. Well, then you know that they know, and they know that you know, and now there's a power struggle, and that power struggle just got won.
Yeah. How much?
And
what else do you know?
They have power over you. Yes. They'll look at your social media postings.
Oh, my God. And you know, people seriously put everything on there. It's like, for Lord's sake, people.
We were just having a discussion in my home about this because I have a relative that likes to post pictures of what she fixed for dinner.
Yep, there's a lot of that. It was funny. I was just going to make a crack about that. Good thing I didn't.
Yeah.
You got a relative with the monkey on their back. Yeah.
Yeah, and that's okay for her. I appreciate that. But you'd be surprised at what people put in information. In fact, today's newspaper, there was an article that said digital safety experts now say that parents should never show their children's faces when posting photographs on the internet.
Yeah.
And so I read that, and then 2 minutes later I'm on Facebook, and my friend's got a picture of his beautiful, darling little 3-year-old and has her identified by name. And so
I like the ones where people are on vacation and they're posting all their information about their vacation
that.
In
yeah,
real time.
I've seen those. I've
and you're
that.
Like, gosh, you know, this would be a great time to break into their house.
Yeah.
Since they're in, you know,
and
some other place.
You know, the other way offenders get that information to start that grooming process is they look to see who your friends are. Because there's quite a status to have a lot of friends and have a lot of friends listed, whether it's in Facebook or LinkedIn, mm-hmm. or there's a whole myriad of different platforms out there, especially for elementary and junior high school kids. And part of that process of success or showing people that you're successful as a student and as a friend is that you have a whole list
right.
of friends. Well, once they have that information, then here comes... It opens up the door to make threats to you.
Well, they can go to all those people's yep. Facebook page
yes.
and see what more information they can glean about you through them.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, they can look backward at you.
Yeah. And one case one of my counterparts is involved in right now is a young man who's 16 years old. He's developed an alternate revenue stream. So what he's developed is a marketing process using the internet at 16 where he's making $3,000 to $5,000 a month.
Wow.
On that process. However, the offender has contacted him and said, "I know who your mama is. I know who your friends are. I know what school you go to. And I know you're running an internet marketing process and you're not paying a dime worth of taxes on it. Now, let's talk about what you're going to do." So this grooming process is all friendly until a certain point.
Then the fear comes in.
And then there's a fear or a demand that
okay.
takes place. And that demand can be satisfied by either more pictures, live streaming, money, obviously. And so it runs the whole gambit of demands based on the offender's knowledge that they have something over on the poor child.
Hmm.
Is there any, does it work? I guess it totally depends on the individual. Okay, so that said, is this something that works better on girls than boys?
Yes.
Teenage than high school? Is there a single kid, you know, a only child versus kid from a big family? Kid with two parents, kid with one parent? Is there any kind of spatial thing to that?
Oh, you used the word again, didn't you?
Yeah, to the victim
pool.
That's
pretty good.
How about these spatial aspects of the victim pool?
That was awesome, Aaron. You know,
you meant Officer Aaron.
Officer. Detective Aaron.
The
interesting part about this whole issue of extorting children is that it runs the full gamut.
Yeah.
Everything from children who don't have anything, but they can get online. And we've had cases and know of cases where children were online at the local library.
Sure.
And were somehow got connected with an offender at the local library to children who have their own computer lab in their bedrooms. So there's no clear-cut victim pool, so to speak, that you can look at and say, well, if we could focus all of our attention on this group,
right,
then everything's going to work out fine.
I figured you would have beaten the odds by now. You know, you guys could have slammed the door shut.
Would have been all over that one. So here's what we do at NCMEC. First of all, we work in conjunction with both local, state, and federal law enforcement all the time. One of the questions I get asked a lot, especially when I'm doing presentations to service clubs, is, are we prepared for this type of thing in our community? And my answer is twofold. Number one, it's occurring in your community. People are getting arrested in your community. And yes, we're prepared for it. In the North State, we are so fortunate. We have one of the only certified CART child abduction response teams in this area, and it's in this area, the Redding, Red Bluff area. These people are ready to respond at a minute's notice, and when they show up, they mean business and they get things done. We also have police chiefs and sheriff in this county that treat these types of cases as priority one cases, and that thought process trickles down to the investigators, and the investigators jump on these things really, really fast. The problem with these cases is that we can jump on them real fast. We can get really excited and go, 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 go. And at some point, a stop sign comes up. And the stop sign is usually technology. And so we have to find out, what is the IP address? Where's the person doing this from? Can we even find that? Is the person using a VPN? If the person's using a VPN, then that creates a whole another thing. On TV, you'll see one detective called another detective and say, we need a search warrant for here. You got it, bucko.
Yeah, right.
It doesn't work like that.
Yeah, no. Right.
No. Search warrant has to include the probable cause for the search, all the items you want to search for, and the expertise of the person asking for the search. That's a huge document. And then you have to find a judge to sign it. And judges don't duck investigators by any means. But judges also have a primary job, and that's to conduct court.
Right.
So nothing happens fast. So the frustration for law enforcement, at least from local law enforcement and the investigators that I work with on a daily basis, is that when these cases pop up, they want it done now. And they're losing sleep. They're not putting any attention to their other cases. This is priority case number one. And then when that stop sign comes up, the technology stop sign, that creates all kinds of frustration.
Sure.
Wow. Well, that's okay. So that's if they're going to abduct them. I guess, let's see. Oh, we've got a few minutes. I'm curious, how many of these never involve physical contact?
Most.
Okay. So they're not all designed to lure your kid to a park in the middle of the night so they can sell them to someone in a foreign country or whatever. Like it, that's kind of the less...
It is. It's a lesser percentage. The idea is to, and I hated to use
it's
that.
Probably easier and more lucrative to exploit somebody, especially now online. I mean, where your hands off the whole time and potentially you disappear into the ether. How many of them are out of the country too? Okay, that's like 17 questions. Go ahead and do those in any order you'd like.
I will do that. A lot of them are out of country.
Okay.
And a lot of them are out of state because they want to have some curtain between them, or a wall between them and the victim. But it doesn't necessarily have to be that way. It could be the next door neighbor. And we've had cases like that where it's somebody in the neighborhood who has observed this person for a time, found them on social media, and then start this whole process again, or start this process up, and then go through it.
Wow. Yeah, wouldn't that... And are people just... I'm sure they're super surprised that it's the next-door neighbor when that eventually comes up.
It's interesting. We saw that.
Remember they have like Spidey sense?
Remember
they were
the Murdoch
like, case? That guy was weird.
The Murdoch case back in North Carolina where he was
the one that never goes away, that just keeps going?
The pillar of the community, and all of a sudden everybody realizes, oh my goodness, he's a murderer.
Yeah.
He's worse than that. I mean, he's involved in everything. And we saw that with BTK, the BTK killer, the blind torture killer. He was the choir director.
Oh, look at Ted Bundy.
Everybody was shot. Ted Bundy, the same
thing.
There's
tons of that.
Yeah, the same thing. So, you know, there's those friends of mine that are in the psychiatry world that said we all live two lives. It just depends on the level of those two lives that we live. But we see those all the time.
Well, we're going to have a second life with Paul Skinner in the second hour here. We're going to talk about some more of this. You can find us at We the People Radio.
.us.
Looking at you, I can read your mind. I am the maker of rules, dealing with fools. I can cheat you blind, and I don't need to see anymore to know that I can read your mind. I can read your mind.
Second hour of We the People Radio. My name is Aaron Ryan.
My name is Bill Cundiff.
What do you have for us, Bill?
Well, Aaron, we've got a sponsor.
We've laughed about that for like 30 years.
Yeah, I know, it's still funny. Our sponsor this hour is Pape Machinery. They're our local John Deere Ag and Turf dealer. If you're looking for a John Deere product, tractor, implement, mower, a pedal tractor for your young one, go by and see them. They've got it all in stock. They're located at 3119 Twin View Boulevard in the city of Shasta Lake. And got a great staff up there that can take care of all your John Deere needs. Or you can give them a call. Their phone number is 530-226-9226. Or catch them on the web at papemachinery.com. There you are.
Nice.
Yeah.
Well, I know that, you know, we spend a lot of time listening to stories about, you know, Hunter Biden and, you know, all that. And you know, we're kind of inundated. Doesn't matter what channel you're on. It's like the same stuff. So we try to bring you things that maybe you're not hearing about all the time, and especially things that require a little bit of time to explain. So if you have topics or issues or maybe books you've read or articles you've read or something, and you're thinking, God, nobody knows about that, we should have somebody talk about that. Would you please send it to us? We like those kind of topics. Those are right up our alley. At wethepeopleradio.us, you can find our email, phone number, that kind of stuff. Happy to look into it, see if we can get them to come on with us. And all of the archives that are posted on here are free to listen to. Commercials are taken out, courtesy of Robert Exter. He goes through and makes everything a little bit shorter and faster for you. So you can download it. It's an MP3 file. Even with no technology, you can pull it off. You don't have to go to some podcast site. I don't really know how those work.
I don't know.
I don't know how that works. It's just your basic MP3 file. You click on it, you listen. But we do hope you make use of the information. Send it to friends, family. You can do whatever you like with it. Nothing's copyrighted. We're not coming after you because you shared it. And every show we do, we create a page with all the information about our guest and any backup information so you can do your own homework. The idea is that you become smarter, not just, you know, have to listen to the same stuff from a different source. So anyway, that's all there for you, and we'd appreciate your reference and your sponsorship if you have access to that. All right, back to our guest, Mr. Paul Skinner, and we're talking about, he is with Team Adam on the National Center for Missing and Exploited Children, and today's focus is exploitation, and along with exploitation comes, I don't know, the thing about grooming, Paul, the thing we hear all the time now, oh, there is no grooming, you know, because of all this transvestite story hour. Oh, grooming isn't a thing. Grooming's totally a thing.
It is.
Yeah, it's totally a thing.
Absolutely.
And it's not a new idea.
No.
How, Just out of curiosity, what, I mean, this is as old as the neighbor down the street hires the kid to come and mow his lawn and then come on in and have a lemonade and that kind of thing. I had a guy. I guess it's not secret. My parents are both gone. I never told them. But when I was a kid, on my paper route, I had one of those old guys. You know, hey, do you want some lemonade? And you kind of felt like, well, I guess I better stay and talk to the guy. And, you know, a lot of conversation about you're going to be cute when you're older, that kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
And then, wife was at the grocery store one time when I went to collect, because you always had to collect at night because that's when people were home. And, wound up trapped in the guy's house. And
wow.
But that was a long process, and there was always something funky about it. But you know, when I was a kid, good Lord, was that, I mean, I'm 60.
That was a long
62.
Time ago.
62.
Yeah.
God, that was 50 years ago. That was before microwaves. long time ago. But with that kind of thing, they didn't have the internet. They didn't know anything about me, my family, or anything. But like in that case, I had to go to the guy's house every day. So they've been exploiters have been at this forever.
That's true. The big difference, though, is now they can do it anonymously.
Yeah, now
and they can pull in groups.
Now they have technology.
And now they can decide, like the crowdsource thing you were talking about last hour, you know. Well, let's see, too tall, too short, too fat, too thin. I mean, now they can literally shop. Dang.
Yeah, and if we look at this, and hopefully it'll change, but if we look at this, the chances of being detected are less than they ever have been in the past.
Well, I was going to ask you.
Because you're doing it anonymously.
Yeah, you were saying, you know, you can track them through their IP address. I would think that any of these folks that are halfway intelligent about technology hide their IP address, don't they?
They do, usually through VPNs.
Mm-hmm.
We can go around a VPN with a search warrant.
That's a virtual private network for somebody who's out there going, what are they saying?
With a search warrant, but you're hoping, with the search warrant, what you're hoping for is you're going to get total cooperation from the media platform. And you might not. You might be request number 4,566 month.
When they can get around to you.
Because everybody else is working it. So the commonality among just about all criminal offenses now is that there's some social media connection.
Right.
Either there's a phone tracking system that's in place that you want to get the information from, or there's information regarding phone calls that have been made, or there's texting back and forth between offenders.
And do you need search warrants for that?
Yes.
Okay.
Every bit of it.
Hmm. The things you don't need search warrants for are looking at their Facebook page and their social media stuff.
Anything they put out in plain sight.
Yeah. Right, right. And I would imagine you glean a lot of information from that. I mean, judging by what people are posting online, I would imagine you could go... I mean, get a lot of information on people through open sources.
That's really true, Bill. And one of the things it does for law enforcement is it provides them with leads. So they may not know how to get a hold of the offender, but they were given a bread trail as to the offender's friend.
Right.
So they go visit the friend.
Yikes.
And ask them.
So where does this start coming unraveled for the offender? Is it a report to law enforcement? And does it come from, like, okay, so if it's kids,
have a complaint first.
Yeah, has the thing gone too far? And then they kind of panic and go, hey, we're having a... I mean, it's probably a really wide range, maybe.
You know, you just explained it perfectly.
Uh-oh.
It usually gets to a point where it's gone too far. And another example of a young lady who was 12 years old that was running her own blog at 1 o'clock in the morning on her Nook. And
what are those little readers from?
Yeah, just for reading.
What do you call it? The reader?
Book readers,
supposedly
yeah.
for reading. But she was running her own blog. And the way this came about is the teacher was complaining because she was always sleepy in class. Talked to the parents about it. The parents said, give me your Nook. And realized that she was running a blog. She had no idea who she was talking to. And the things that she was revealing and the things that were being revealed to her by an offender were completely out of whack. And yet this was something that she took great pride in because she was head of the blog.
Mm-hmm.
So it was
and so
her blog.
Was she only communicating with one person? Or
no, she was communicating with a bunch of people.
Oh, okay. Mm. And
Did they know she was 12 years old?
Yes.
Oh, geez.
Yeah, that was probably the goal.
That's a problem.
That was probably the goal.
Yeah.
So that goes back to my earlier point of any device that a child has, is they're capable of being, not subdued, but they're capable of being enticed by offenders.
Surveilled, yeah.
Yeah.
How long, realize that this probably, every single question I ask, I'm like, well, that's probably like about 800 examples of this. But, okay, just like, shooting from the hip. How long does this take? No, it probably depends on the kid. But, I mean, does this go on for years? Or is this how patient are these people, the creepy people?
They're very patient because there's more than one.
Yeah, they have a lot of them they're working on at the same time.
Oh, yeah. I forgot about that. God, I'd make a terrible criminal.
We've even had offenders that had separate computers just to keep track of the different victims that they were working
with. How do these people have all this time?
I don't know. I don't seem to have enough time to get stuff done.
What's going on?
Yeah.
What the hell?
Yeah.
I mean, you have all the time. And so do they tend to be people who are involved in computer stuff, or is this a total just a basement sideline that they've got going on?
Both.
Like during the day they're, Joe the plumber, and then at night they're secretly creepy guy on the internet?
Both. Yeah, and that's another factor that makes it difficult to investigate.
Sure. Look for the guy with no tan.
Yeah.
All right, mister, how much time do you spend in the basement?
Yeah. But like I said, once it comes to light to law enforcement, and then it's jumped on immediately, really, really fast, because the idea is you have to shut this down quickly. You have to stop the forward movement of this grooming process. You have to identify the suspect, the offender, and get the offender in custody as soon as possible. And then that's when the investigation gets deeper and much more broader, because then you have to find out.
Then you find out all sorts of stuff, sure. It's like Pandora's box. Well, tell me this. What's the, because we didn't talk about this, we're sort of assuming we all know, and I realized, I don't know. What is the crime? Like, okay, so you're chatting, you're the guy in the basement, and you're chatting back and forth with a kid online. Okay, I'm ready to pull the plug on you right there, but
seriously,
you know what I mean? Like,
yeah,
ding, ding, ding. But you can't arrest somebody for that.
Most of the time, law enforcement relies on the child pornography statutes,
okay,
which are great statutes in California. We're lucky to have them. Although I'm going to tell you in a few minutes about an issue that we're currently facing with California laws. But the child pornography statutes are great statutes, and they're statutes that are strong enough to allow you to look at something and know that it's a felony.
Okay.
We'll give you that search warrant, once it's established.
Because, all right, so if a kid is being exploited, say the parent stumbles across, happens to see, a text message or some message and goes, wait a minute, that seems weird, delve into a little bit, they go to the police, hey, Mr. Policeman, this seems weird. Mm-hmm. Then it begins.
It does.
And you have one side, at least one side of the entire, you have one side of the picture. They can go to the offender for that? Like if the kid has sent photos or involved in video or whatever?
True. I think the mistake that most people make is they think that once that's reported, it's going to be immediately followed up by the person that they reported it to. And
you mean like when they go to the police department?
Right. And that's not necessarily the case. If the offender is local, if they can identify the offender as being local, then they're going to be all over. If the offender is not local, then we're going to
we'll
pass that on to our federal partners and let them know about that.
Because it's across state lines?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah. And even if it gets to a point where the case is not prosecutable,
because they technically haven't done enough?
We'll know who the offender is, and the offenders will be recognized for that.
Do we have, in your National Center for Missing and Exploited Children, you have the Take It Down program. So if there have been pornographic pictures sent or, video or that kind of thing, you can help. You guys can help take that down. Do local police have those kind of resources? Is that something they do, or local district attorneys?
They usually reach out to us.
Do they? Okay.
For that. And when we visited on a previous occasion, I was telling you about embedded people that we have embedded in our organization.
Yeah.
And we have Homeland Security and FBI embedded in our organization. So as soon as a request comes in to take it down, it's a team concept between FBI, HSI, and NCMEC. And, of course, the social media platforms to find that information and take that information down and then look for like information that's out there and also take that down, too. So there's some tremendous amount of work that goes on. So there's a case in Redding, California. But yet this work is, and Redding investigators have identified the offender. We're on our way through the court process. And in Arlington, Virginia, our team is working on getting all that information pulled out of the web. So it almost looks like a whirlwind. You know, the picture of a tornado, how small it is on the bottom.
Yeah.
And then as you get to the top, it gets bigger and bigger and bigger. That's what happens because we start getting these case updates. And it starts off with XYZ was reported in Chico. Chico PD and FBI Chico is investigating it. Oop. The IP address comes back to Des Moines, Iowa. FBI Iowa and Iowa DOJ is now has that part. Boop, now it's up at NCMEC, and NCMEC FBI and HSI is taking it on.
How many times does that turn out to be not just one guy, but part of a group?
Maybe 50-50 from what I've learned.
Huh, curious.
Wow.
So they don't necessarily all hang out together.
No, it's competition.
Oh, of course it is. What was I thinking?
Sorry.
Yeah, it's a competition. Of course it is. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so they probably have their own chat room. Guess what I did today? Wow.
I've seen it, yeah.
Huh. Wow, evil has no bounds. Well, we better... Williamson, they're shaking his head. It's like, I know, because of the heebie-jeebies, doesn't it? Yeah, so the police wrote a song about this a long time ago. Who would have known? We don't stand so close to me. You can find us at We the People Radio.
.us.
Nice job, Bill.
Is that what you're looking for?
Yeah, it did a bad, bad thing, all right. So we were chatting on the break about, do these people typically see, especially kids and stuff online. How many of these people tend to be like the baseball coach or the Boy Scout leader or the... Are they the online people or are they the... I mean, and a bunch of them are really nice, and so, sorry, don't send me hate mail. Well, you can if you want. But does that transition into that online exploitation, or is face-to-face grooming a thing and online grooming is kind of a thing? Do they go back and forth, or do they tend to stick to their departments?
That's a good question. So this weekend...
Just based on what you see.
Weekend we had two newspaper articles. One was a youth pastor. The other one was a coach that was arrested for grooming. And two other people that were arrested for grooming that were in the news locally were computer programmers. So the question about offenders, they run the whole gambit all the way from... people who don't want to talk to children face-to-face to people that get some excitement out of talking to children face-to-face.
When you're doing an investigation and you you want to get records from social media platforms, are they typically cooperative, or are they all pretty much get a search warrant? Are there certain ones that are easier to work with than others?
Well, I'll answer it this way. There's no such thing as getting information from a social media group without a search warrant.
Okay.
But I will say this, that especially involving a child, they place that as a priority.
So that's good to know.
There could be, 150, 200 requests per day go to Google, and they'll separate those into piles. And
right.
Those involve children.
So once it hits the search warrant stage, they're pretty cooperative when it involves kids.
They are. They are. The only frustration that I'm hearing from law enforcement is we're not certain that we get all the information.
Oh.
But we have to deal with what we get. So. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Oh. So once you shut these people down, how much, given a kind of a ballpark example,
sure.
What did they do? And then once they got, say they did get arrested, does anything really happen to them?
So let's go back to Heather.
Because it seems like nothing ever really happens to people anymore.
The 2000 case with Heather.
Yeah.
The offender on that case was arrested along with his wife.
Oh.
There was a deal cut.
His wife was in on it?
Yes.
Oh, God, what a great couple.
There was a deal cut, and the wife got credit for time served. So she'd been in jail for a month by the time they went to the first preliminary hearing. So she pled guilty, got the month as part of her deal. He pled guilty, got 7 years in jail. Now, remember, this is 7 years in California. So 7 years in California, with good time, you can take off almost 50% of that time. So he spent 3.5, 4 years in custody. When he came out, he had to register as a sex offender for the rest of his life. That was in 2000.
Okay.
In 2023, under Assembly Bill 145, people that are convicted of sex offenses involving minors can petition the court to be excluded from the sex registrant.
Wait, isn't that how you get on the sex registry?
Isn't that odd? Yes.
Yeah, that's say that again.
So if it's a sexual offense with an adult, you're up the creek. But if it's with a kid, you can actually get that removed from your record?
No. It's going to stay on your record, but you don't have to register as a sexual offender.
Yeah. Well,
and
that's because you're what? If you're not a sex offender, you're what's
you're just
a regular guy?
Regular guy.
Okay.
And what that does for it creates a real problem for these poor detectives, because the very first thing they do when there's a child abduction or an event takes place where there's an unknown offender is they go right to their sex register files.
Right.
Who lives in this area?
Who's in the area?
Yeah, sure.
And what kind of car are they driving? What's their current living situation? Which detective had last contact with this person?
Mm-hmm.
And so this kind of creates a problem for law enforcement.
What's the recidivism rate for these guys? I mean, they get busted, they do time to get out. Do they have numbers on?
It depends who you talk to. If you talk to them, it's 100%.
Oh.
100%. They're good now. If you talk to district attorney's offices, they'll say that's not true.
Yeah.
Once an offender, always offender. It's just a different change. They'll change.
They're just smarter, and they don't get caught quite as fast.
Right. They'll change their game, change their platform, change this and that.
Yeah.
Again, it goes back to that spatial thing. As humans, once we're successful at something, we tend to go back to that.
Mm-hmm. Yikes.
That whole idea that, well, like this, can we talk about this?
Yes, please.
The flyer. So it's from the Los Angeles Unified School District. It's the Rainbow Club, a 10-week district-wide virtual club for LGBTQ++, et cetera, et cetera. Elementary school students, their friends.
Elementary school students.
Uh-huh. Their friends and their grown-ups. Interesting. Their grown-ups. Like they're keeping them as pets.
Yeah,
yes.
They're not parents. They're grown up friends.
Grown ups.
Yeah.
So it's a Zoom thing. It's 3:15 to 3:30. We set aside time for caregivers and educators to ask questions and learn about the group, and then for 15 minutes. And at 3:30, with no endpoint designated here, our student centered space begins. And guests of students are always welcome. which as I'm reading that, but maybe it's because I'm talking to you, that sounds like other kids. But maybe it could be grown-ups. I don't know. So here's a great spot. You got everybody corralled in one space, and everybody's topic oriented. And how simple would that be?
And your pool of children are perfect. I mean, they're setting these kids up to be exploited, it looks like to me.
Yeah, so what you have is you have a Zoom link that is unrestricted.
Uh-huh.
Anybody can log on.
So it might not be the school district. I mean, just to be clear, this might not, I mean, might not be the school district that's the offender, but here you've thrown the door open. So here you go, Captain Offender.
Sure.
You know.
And then, jump on in.
I'm a grown-up.
Meet Mikey.
And on Zoom, you can send your instant messaging back and forth to any participant
right. You
want that's in the Zoom room. So
you call them out for private conversation later.
You can.
Here's my Facebook link. Here's my Instagram. Here's my...
Yep. So as my father used to say, this is a target-rich environment.
Yep, exactly.
I'm familiar with that expression.
You filtered it down right here.
You take a look at that and you think, oh my goodness, what are we doing to these precious children? We're opening the doors to offender activity.
Yeah. So just out of curiosity, we learned quite a bit about what NCMEC does, but is part of their mission to maybe spot this stuff and go to the school district and say, excuse me, is that a thing you guys get to do?
I don't know. That just popped up the other day, and I saw that and went, you've got to be kidding me.
Yeah.
And if you take a look at the top of the flyer,
yeah,
those are the sponsoring agencies.
Oh,
but
they're really tiny.
But read the sponsoring agencies. They're all part of the school district.
HRDE. I saw the initials and I thought, what the heck does that mean? Human Relations Diversity and Equity.
Department at LA School District.
And the Student Health and Human Services. LA School District. Yeah. Wow. They didn't really think that through. Because it's one thing if you're having a club on campus, you know, but this is happening after school.
Online. With no controls over who can get in there.
And here's the meeting ID and, you know, just like a regular Zoom link.
Yes.
So you don't have to go through your guidance counselor or whatever to get access to it where it's all vetted. And so it could be any grown-ups in there?
Yes.
From reading this?
Yes.
Wow.
I don't see the word parent on that either, do you?
No.
No parents.
Interesting.
They were, what are they?
You know, it's funny, when I was that age, I wasn't even, maybe I was a little slow, but I really wasn't thinking about LGBTQ plus XYZ. I mean, that wasn't even...
We didn't know about it.
We didn't know about it.
Bill, we're dinosaurs. We didn't know about it, just be clear.
Well, has the human race actually changed to the point where little kids are thinking about that now and confused enough to where we have to do programs like this? It just,
yes.
To me, is wrong.
Well, there's all that, but bottom line is you've corralled a bunch of kids that are in a small subset there and given open access to a bunch of adults. And the LGBTQ thing is, the focus is... sexual orientation. So not only have you given open access to grown-ups, but you made your theme about sex. What a great idea. It's a fail on multiple levels.
It is. And it's created an environment where we're going to see additional victims, no doubt.
Oh, yeah.
So what's TK through fifth grade? What's TK?
I don't know what that is.
Kindergarten.
Kindergarten?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, my God.
I'll take the flyer away. Bill's freaking out. Bill's going to need therapy. Are we close to a break? Not yet.
Bill's going to start throwing things in a minute.
Yeah. Bill's here. We'll put it right under this other flyer. You can't see it anymore.
I wonder if people that object to that could get on that Zoom meeting and maybe disrupt it.
Run for your lives.
Run for your lives, children.
It's a... it's really something as a parent, as a grandparent, as a coach, as a, but you know, you look now as parents, grandparents, and especially people who work with kids, you know, Girl Scouts, Boy Scouts, all that. You've got to be really mindful of this stuff. And I mean, back when I was working, I worked for Girl Scouts of the USA for a period of time, and I ran a huge troop with like 35 kids in it, and I had to be really careful. At one point, I had one of the dads was going to be our camp cook, and one of the other dads was on the police department, and he's like, "You didn't hear this from me, but Mr. So and So has been investigated for child molestation. He was involved with junior, not Rotary, Kiwanis, and had taken high school kids on a trip, and there was some inappropriate behavior." And he's like, "You can't let that guy come to camp." Had to do a lot of dancing around that. So we used to have a lot of, I guess, people kind of watched out. But you didn't have the online aspect of that. You didn't have the investigative aspect for that.
Right.
Has that helped or hurt?
I don't know. I know a lot of my friends that used to enjoy coaching and scouting and those types of things are afraid to do it now.
Yep.
For fear of some type
being
of
accused.
Allegation.
Yeah.
I think we've lost a lot from a society standpoint because of that, where able-bodied, talented parents are afraid to interact with children.
You just have to be really, you have to pay attention. But how much of your information comes from that network, though? Hey, we saw Mr. So-and-so always gives Susie Q a ride home. You know, she spends an inordinate amount of time at their house. Do you get stuff like that, or that would go to local law enforcement? Probably not you guys.
No, that would go to local law enforcement.
So then the kid winds up missing. You start into the cold case, and then you go, "Oh, hey, there were these reports."
Unfortunately, yeah.
Yeah, that's not awesome. So, all right, back to the online stuff. So, what are you looking for on your kids' on your kids or grandkids stuff?
Well, here's what we can do as parents and grandparents. Number one, be aware that it's out there. There's so many parents that I talk to, especially when I'm doing presentation to Rotary clubs and other social groups, that will walk up to me later and say, "I had no idea this was going on. I had no concept that this could even happen in my house." And the answer is, yeah, it can happen in your house. If you have online activity going on in your house, it can happen. Your child can be a victim of that. Next step is we've got to watch the activities of our children. There's nothing wrong with being a parent and saying you're limited to X amount of time per day on social media, and you'll do it while we're sitting here at the kitchen table. Or if you need to do research, I will help you with that research, and this will be a father-daughter time or a mother-daughter time, but you're not going to be doing the research on your own. The next thing, too, and I mentioned it earlier, is we need to realize that any type of device is capable.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Of connecting potential victim with an offender, any type of device. And so I just recently saw a new communication device that's coming out real soon that's put out by Motorola that is basically Bluetooth compatible. And so you're actually talking to the device, and it's about the size of what we used to call our childhood a box of matches.
Okay.
A small box of matches. And so that device, too, will be capable of introducing both offender and victim. So we've got to be assured of that. We have to stay informed as to what's going on in California as far as the laws are concerned, and we have to fight back on those situations. AB 145, which was the bill I talked about, where a person now has the right to petition the court to be excluded from being on a sexual offender list for the rest of their life, is absolutely ridiculous. Mm-hmm. Absolutely ridiculous. And the counter argument to that is, well, if it's a 19-year-old boy and an 18-year-old girl and they are somehow caught in a compromising situation, then he has to apply as a sex offender for the rest of his life. No, that's never happened.
Really?
Yeah, that's got to be like total exception to the rule, and that's not what they're going for.
It's not
going to
happen.
Is going on the sex registry the fact that you were arrested for a crime that was a sex crime, like that falls into that category, or does the judge mandate that you have to go on the registry?
Both.
Okay.
Both. The judge will mandate it.
But if the judge doesn't mandate it, do you still have to go on it?
That part I don't know.
Huh.
I'm not certain.
I was just thinking about that, because they always say that, and you have to register on the thing, which kind of led me to believe maybe that wasn't always
done. The argument for AB 145 is my defendant, or the offender, was an alcoholic. He was a methamphetamine user. He was this, had all these issues that would keep him, his cognitive skills down. Now he's taken the cure, and he's now a member of this organization or this group, and now cognitively he's fine, and this shouldn't follow him the rest of his life. Okay, that's worthy of discussion. It's worthy of a court decision. But just to say, because the victim was a minor, I should be absolved of that requirement is
that's crazy.
False. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's nutty.
Yeah.
Well, besides that, I mean, obviously, prison time and stigma and everything is not enough of a deterrent, because it seems like this problem is growing.
Right.
So we're going to take away the stigma and the punishment, so that'll make it, yes, get bigger.
Fair.
Makes no sense
what
at all.
The heck? All right, we've got to take a quick break because, you know, everybody probably needs some blood pressure medication. Everyone go fill up with decaf.
Yeah.
Step away from the coffee pot. This is probably not good for you. Oh, my gosh. We'll be right back. You are listening to We the People, and you can find us at We the People Radio.
Not U.S.
Yeah, shower song. So we were talking about Megan's Law in the break there.
We were.
Yeah, so educate us about Megan's Law there.
So if you take a look at Megan's Law for California, you can see who is a registered sex offender based on geography, based on name. And that information is not private. That information is public information, and it's provided to us by the state of California. And so I'm shocked and surprised at people that will move into a neighborhood and not check Megan's Law before they buy a house, because that would be, especially if I had children, that would be one of the first things I would do.
Mm-hmm. Several years ago, we checked on that. It was that site or another site, and we were looking at a particular neighborhood. And there were sex offenders everywhere. I mean, they cluster.
Wow.
It was shocking. But that's a great idea. It's great advice. Check the neighborhood out before you buy a house.
Yeah, no kidding. Well, and when it comes to this online thing, just out of curiosity, like the club at school, you know, with the open Zoom link where anybody can go on there and target your kid, hands down loser, but what are the most prevalent places you see it? I would think Facebook would be big, and Instagram and those kinds of things. Is it all these chat rooms or games?
Games. Definitely games.
Yeah.
As far as the children are concerned. Adults, chat room.
Okay.
Chat rooms. But the games is the catalyst that introduces them to the group and or the offender. And then they'll break off into chat from that point on.
And that's like, you couldn't even have, like, even if you had a cyber,
monitor?
Yeah, like, there's no way to do that, really, is there?
No. How many people are online right now?
Yeah, like zillions. Yeah. And there's zillions of websites. So for somebody out there thinking, well, that's ridiculous. The police should be on there. Like, how are you going to do that?
Yeah.
And then, you know, I guess kind of like, you know, don't get in the car with the guy with the candy or the puppy, right?
Or the laptop.
Yeah, that too. But on this kind of stuff, you know, if your kid is on one of those sites, the directions are you never communicate with them outside, never communicate with anyone outside that game. I wonder if that's even possible to set up.
There are some parental controls. They don't go as far as you and I think they should, obviously.
Yeah.
But one point I want to make, and I get asked this by a lot of people, especially when I was in law enforcement, my child has a right to privacy.
Oh, yeah. No, they don't.
No. No. Your child doesn't have a right to privacy.
Yeah, no, that's
my child has a right to keep from me going in his room, searching his room.
Nope.
No.
That's your room.
It's not,
and your stuff.
It's not your child's room. It's your room.
Yeah.
And so sometimes it's a good idea to check on the children.
Oh, yeah.
And just to... every so often, just do a little integrity testing and see where you stand with them.
Yep.
You know, one thing I wanted to point out before the break was you'd ask, what can we do?
Yeah.
One of the things that we're really bad about as a society is honoring and showcasing those people that are doing something about this. So here's an example.
Sure.
The other day, there was an article in the Reading newspaper about a coach that has retired now, is working on issues, you know, I think it's in Colombia or Ecuador. Basically, the Sound of Freedom type issues. That's somebody that we need to celebrate. That's somebody that we need to be honoring as a son of Reading. And same thing with these investigators that are churning out these cases, that are grabbing these guys and stopping further victimization by those particular suspects. They don't like the limelight. I get it. I understand it.
Yeah.
Some of them are going to be really upset with me later on this year because some of them are going to be getting awards from NCMEC for the work that they've done this last year. But we need to celebrate that fact. And as a public, and as a public that's served by these talented people, we need to make sure that they know that we appreciate the work that they're doing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because there tends to be a growing, we talked about that in the first show we did with you, mm-hmm. that, you know, people watch The Sound of Freedom, and after, you know, that kind of all landed, it's like, well, why isn't anyone doing something about this, right?
And they are.
It's like, hey, wait a second. There are a lot of people doing stuff.
Yeah. And we are so fortunate in Shasta County. We've got a liaison set up between Children's Protective Services, the foster system, local law enforcement, and NCMEC that is phenomenal. And so we've got a communications methodology that just works so well between all of us. And we all bring something to the table, but we all can't do everything. And
sure.
So we're on the phone with each other constantly saying, hey, I know this is going on right now, or I'll get a call from CPS saying so-and-so is on the run again. She left a foster home. Last time she left, she was being turned out as a prostitute in such and such a place. And I'll say, hang on, let me get the Anderson detective on the line with us, and we'll talk about that. So we're really lucky here because we've got some folks that are just super, super dedicated.
Like everything, network is key, huh?
Network is everything.
Network is key.
Yes.
And
I don't mind buying coffee. I'll buy coffee three or four times a month.
Network is key. So let's say you're maybe you're a retired person who was never in law enforcement, but this is a thing that you're like, wow, didn't realize there was so much of this, and I'm smart, I can do stuff, I can work a computer. Are there things that you would encourage them? Because I'm thinking, okay, let's say you had time on your hands, and here's the Rainbow Club. You see this flyer that your grandchild brings home or whatever. Log in, right? Log in. See what's being discussed. I mean, are there places for volunteers in this? People who are non-skilled people?
There are. The difficulty with that is that we're very sensitive about court time. And the last thing we want to do is put a volunteer in a position where they have to be go through the court process.
As a witness or
Which is not a one and done process.
Yeah.
Obviously. It's,
but what about like observational stuff? Is there stuff that people that you would recommend they do?
Well, first of all, be aware of what's going on around your neighborhood. If something's creepy, it is creepy. Acknowledge the fact that, that it is creepy.
Creepy is creepy.
I.e., your newspaper guy.
Yeah.
That it is creepy.
Yep. Schwartz.
Mr. Schwartz.
Hopefully Mr. Schwartz is in hell.
Local law enforcement.
Because he would be, 130 now?
Yeah. Let local law enforcement know about that. I think the big issue is this is what I really want to leave everybody with, is that in order for something like this to happen, there has to be a likely offender plus a suitable target minus a capable guardian.
Oh, that's a biggie, yeah.
And so for us to really support our children like we say we do, we've got to adopt that role of being the capable guardian. Because if there's anything absent of that, if the target's suitable and the guardian's not available to stop it or to discover it, then we're going to have a crime of opportunity. And that crime doesn't end at that moment. That crime continues either through psychological issues that occur later on in life or, as we talked about earlier, with the boomerang issue, where something comes back up at a later time,
sure,
and that victim reoffends. So I want to leave you with a good story about Heather. Remember I told you
We have like 5 minutes.
Heather in 2000 was victimized.
Okay.
And the suspect or the offender at that time did jail time. He got out of jail. She went on to become a very prominent person in her community. And here, 2023, she's now receiving threats to disclose these photographs. So the offender in this case has been arrested. He was not local. In fact, he was in New Hampshire. And he admitted to everything. He had been sitting on these photographs for 12 years until he got to a point with his education in computer science that he knew exactly how to do this and how to backdoor in through Facebook and some other places without having a Facebook sign-on, and was finally able to do it. He located her through facial recognition. So he's been arrested. Obviously, he's been fired because of using his company's facial recognition program. Is worthy of termination. We have taken down everything that we know of. And now here we are. We don't know if there's more out there.
Mm.
We don't know.
You would always be waiting for the other shoe to drop.
Yes.
How horrible.
And so this event that occurred to her, super traumatic in 2000, super traumatic in 2023. Is it over?
Yeah.
We don't know. And if you go back and look at this case with Heather and look at it from had it not been for... Had it not been for her parents not tiring of going to those Thursday night classes and attending each class, they would have caught on and went, no. This is
we're not doing this.
Something's wrong here. We're out.
Right.
They were trusting. And when it comes to children, we don't have that luxury.
Yeah, nobody gets trust.
No, nobody gets trust. So,
wow,
a likely offender, a suitable target, and a capable guardian that does nothing will result in the offense. And that's got to be our focus.
So just from a law enforcement standpoint, when they go in on a guy like that, well, I can't miss the idea that he waited 12 years and he still got busted. Ha ha.
Yeah, he didn't have it all figured out.
Not a criminal genius. So when they go in there, are they allowed to look for other signs of other people that are being exploited the same way? Or is it really narrow focus? You got to stay on just her.
They're looking at everything.
Okay. So they can kind of look at his computer history and see.
And they're taking everything.
Okay. And so if they show that this guy's got this wide range of...
Yeah.
They can go roll them up on those too.
Imagine this.
And then the other girl gets a call. Hey, by the way.
Uh-huh. You come home. Your husband's not home. The computer's gone. Cell phones are gone.
Oh.
Everything's gone.
And a policeman's business card is on your counter?
Yeah, there's a note on the counter. Yeah. Exactly. So it has a way of rocking someone's world, which is exactly what law enforcement wants to do because it's going to break open more cases.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, yeah. Well, so it, once they find, because, I don't know, you know, it's funny, it just occurred to me, all these would be in different stages of operation.
Yes.
Like they're exploiting people, but they didn't all start on the same day. So you get some that are in the, you know, they're simmering, and you've got others that are in boil, and, you know, you've got various stages. So then does law enforcement contact the families?
Yes, and I've had to make those calls before, too, and they are very uncomfortable calls.
Sure.
To have to make to say, hey, by the way,
your kid,
we have a problem.
Wow. Yeah, because...
Yeah, your kid's a potential target.
Your kid is being targeted in the process of target.
Yeah.
Mm. Man. And as a kid, you know, you just, you think, I don't know, we don't grow up real suspicious. It's just not how we're wired. We're not particularly suspicious, which is why it's so easy to take advantage of
people. Well, I think that parents today aren't nearly as tech savvy as their kids.
In some cases,
true. And the kids are able to kind of fly under the wire with the parents, I think, in a lot of cases. And I mean, they're totally...
Surprised.
Probably surprised.
Yeah, they might want to get with the program. Hopefully, they've listened. So if you have parents, grandparents, all these folks that are dealing with kids, please send them a copy of the show. You can find all the information about Paul Skinner and National Missing and Exploited Children at WeThePeopleRadio.us.
I know we can't slow down. We can't hold back, though, you know, we wish we could. I know there ain't no rest for the wicked until we close our eyes for good.